meeting will come to order.
Brett Dodds with you?
Yeah.
Thanks again. How's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. Nice to call you, Senator.
Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Today is February 8th.
We do not yet have a forum, but
Is at the table. And as I understand, Senator Hall, we've got a delete all amendment that you're going to want to introduce. So I would indicate to you members that this is the A2 amendment. That's what we are going to be working off of. And there is a summary for you that is also identified as the A2, so you can disregard the other documents. And until we get a quorum, Senator Hall, we can't move the amendment, but perhaps you could begin outlining for us what is in the amendment.
Sure. Mr. Chair, thank you, and members. The Senate File 121 deals with degrees of harm to service dogs or public safety dogs. It increases the criminal penalty for intentionally and without justification causing great bodily harm or substantial bodily harm to a public safety dog for a gross misdemeanor to a felony. And as we get started here, I would like to say thank you to the canine officers. Some of them might have to leave here, and especially Officer Dan Long from the Burnsville Police Department and his partner and canine Dagger. Dagger's still here? If you'd stand up, Dan. Thank you. And here's our Dagger. Great specimen of a partner, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, okay. For inviting.
Yeah, thank you. And any other officers that are canine, would you stand? These guys are from around the city here. Appreciate you guys coming. Thank you. So, with that, we just...
One moment. I forgot to indicate for the record that we are dealing with Senate File 121, and we'll be taking up the A2 amendment in here in just a minute. Please proceed.
Okay, and you'll let me know when the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, as soon as we have a quorum, then we're going to go forward with that.
Great. We do have some testifiers, and so if I could have Officer Jorgensen and Jorgensen Jr., along with his canine partner, Major, come up here from the Roseville Police Department, and Officer Mark Fittichetti, that's a mouthful,
Ficadenti.
From the Fittichetti, come on, Ficadenti, thank you, from the St. Paul Police Department, join me up here.
Welcome to the committee.
Who wants to go first?
Officer Jorgensen, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please proceed.
It's John Jorgensen. Spelling of the last name is J-O-R-G-E-N-S-E-N. I'd like to say thank you for allowing us to be here today. Just give you a little background on myself and my canine partner, Major, that's here with me. I've been a police officer for the city of Roseville for the last 13 and a half years, the last 8 as a canine handler. I'm also a member of the USPCA Region 12, and I'm a member of the Executive Board, which I have been for the last 4 years. Canine Major is a 9.5-year-old German Shepherd dog. He's been my partner, like I said, for the last 8 years. He's a dual-purpose dog trained in narcotics and patrol work. I'm here today representing canine handlers from all across the state of Minnesota. After several willful and violent assaults in 2010, canine handlers recognized the need to address the current canine assault statute. This is not necessarily a crime of great frequency, but it's a crime of great consequence. On 2 separate occasions in 2010, suspects attempted to kill my canine partner, Major. In July, a felony suspect was fleeing police in a stolen motor vehicle. My canine partner apprehended the suspect on the edge of a lake in the city of Maplewood by his upper arm. That suspect willfully waded out into deeper water with my dog attached to him. Approximately 25, 30 feet from shore, grabbed him by the collar and held him under the water for 5 to 6 seconds. He did this several more times until I had to enter the water and try to help my partner and save him from being killed eventually we were able to take the suspect into custody. And when it came time for charging out on that incident, we realized that the current canine assault statute wasn't applicable. My dog did not have any demonstrable bodily harm from that incident, but it was obvious that night that that suspect was trying to kill my partner. On November 12th of 2010, myself and Major responded to Maplewood PD's request for an assist. They did not have any canines working. We responded through mutual aid. There was a suspected burglary and felony theft occurring. Canine Major was deployed. He apprehended a suspect by the lower leg. The suspect willfully took out a 6-inch butterfly knife, opened it up, and stabbed my partner 4 times. He stabbed him in the head, the neck, the shoulder blades, and in the mid-back area. The injury to his mid-back hit his vertebrae, and since that incident, hasn't been able to use his hind legs. He also suffers from incontinence. When Canine Major was, when I was able to carry him out of the woods, get him into a canine car, we rushed him to the U of M Vet Center for medical treatment. He had lost a lot of blood. He had a collapsed lung, and he was in extreme state of shock. Miraculously, the U of M staff did a wonderful job and saved Major's life, which is very important to my family and I that he's still with us. But a key point to bring up is essentially my dog was killed that night as a police service dog. Canine Major will never work for the city of Roseville as a police dog again. It's what these dogs are bred to do. Since Major's a little more than a year old, this is what he's been doing, and he's done it very well. Ironically, after that suspect stabbed Major, he again fled and tried to hide, and a St. Paul Police Department canine located him and apprehended him. Furthermore, another St. Paul police canine conducted an evidence search later on and actually located the knife inside a bloody glove that the suspect had used to stab my partner. The loss of Major has had a profound impact on our department and has left a huge void in our unit. He was the longest-serving canine in the history of our department. Personally, it has been devastating to me and my family. I definitely take solace in the fact that I might be here today because of his actions that morning, and he certainly may have saved another police officer's life. When these dogs are assaulted or killed, the ripple effect is massive. It affects the handler, their agency, and surrounding agencies that rely on canine assistance through mutual aid. Oftentimes, in certain parts of the state, it would be typical for there to be one dog in the entire county. We're lucky here in the metro area to have more dogs work in the street. When these assaults occur, it also sets in motion a complex replacement process. That process costs time and money, and we all know that budgets are tough. Officer Ficadeni will touch on that in a minute. In the state of Minnesota, there's approximately 380 canines. These canines are deployed thousands of times a year all over the state. These canines are a locating tool. 95% of their work is done with their nose, not with their teeth. These canines are a huge asset and great ambassadors for the cities they serve. They make our jobs safer, and they, most importantly, bring thousands of people to justice that wouldn't normally be caught. The bill that is before you is a wonderful starting point. As we said, we believe there's a lot of work we can do in this area. I see that the amendment that's going to be brought forth is that we're going to lower the threshold to substantial bodily harm, which is a great, great starting point. The reason that this is important is that in a substantial assault on one of our canines will most often affect the length of their working life. Due to the normal lifespan of a dog, a police dog especially, a broken bone today could most certainly cut short a police service dog's working career down the road. Even for the dog that can recover from that initial injury, they may suffer some debilitating side effects later on, such as arthritis, bone spurs, and joint damage. This will most likely rob these agencies of these canines in their latter years of service, which most oftentimes are some of their most effective.
Thank you, Officer Jorgensen. At this point, I'd indicate that we do have a quorum present. For those members that were not here when we first started, there is an author's amendment that is an A2 amendment and an overview or a summary, which is an A2 overview. And those are the documents we're going to be working off of rather than the original documents. At this point, Senator Hall, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, I so move the A2 amendment for Senate File 121.
Any discussion as to the motion to amend Senate File 121, so that it's in the order that the author wishes.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lett.
Is this the first committee for this bill?
Second committee, yes.
I believe it is, yes.
Mr.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Hall, on the back of the amendment, the eighth amendment, the effective date is August 1, 2011. Maybe staff could give us a little advice as to the delay in this and why we wouldn't do it right away, just to throw it out there for conversation.
Mr. Backus.
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbrechtson, essentially, the effective date is whatever the committee would like it to be. August 1st is the standard effective date, especially for criminal provisions, but if you wanted to move that up, you could. I don't know. Generally speaking, with criminal laws, we don't have a day following final enactment amendments. Usually we want to give people time to know about the law. So, you know, you might want to avoid that, but certainly a June or July effective date could be preferable to you.
Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you. Just follow up. Just threw it out there for conversation. I guess I'd leave it up to the author. My concern is, what could happen between now and August 1st, and you know, not that it would happen or anything, but is it that immediate? I don't know. I guess I'd leave that up to the author. I just happened to catch that. So.
Yeah.
Senator Hall.
And I would take that as a friendly amendment and move it to what's the wording immediately after it's passed?
Mr. Backus, perhaps you could help us with the specific language?
Mr. Chair and members, it depends what the author's intent is. If you wanted to have it effective the day following final enactment, then you would, after effective, you would delete August 1, 2011, and you would insert the day following final enactment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, based on what Senate Counsel said a few minutes ago, though, I'm not sure an immediate effective date is a good idea. I would suggest maybe May or June, May 1st or June 1st, so it's on the law so people know what the law is.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, Senator Engelbrechtson, I would be open to either or. Let's go May 1st.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Backus, would you state the language for us specifically?
Mr. Chair, members, the new amendment then would be on page 2, line 7, delete August and insert May. So it reads, this section is effective May 1st, 2011, and applies to crimes committed on or after that date.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of points. One is we really have no idea when this is going to end up being enacted, given the nature of the legislative process. It could end up in the logjam on the last day.
That's true.
Of session, May 22nd or 23rd, whatever the formal day is. In which case, it will. I don't know how it would be treated. Probably a default, back to August 1st. I don't know. But the other problem is every new crime that comes before us is going to have the same issue. We want to try to move as quickly as we can to criminalize the behavior because of the harm that we're trying to prevent. In this case, the harm is for these reasons. In other cases, other bills before us, the harm will be just as powerful with other victims. I would suggest we tread carefully before setting a precedent. I think there's a reason why the general practice has been August 1st, because we want to give people an opportunity to become aware of the new law so they aren't criminalizing conduct that they weren't aware of, even though constitutionally ignorance is not a defense. As a practical matter, it's really only fair, I think, to do that. And so we ought to be cautious about what kind of precedent this might set. And I don't know offhand what other crimes or new crimes that we're creating we have done this for. I think this is a good bill overall. I think it's a laudatory one. But I worry about that, and I wonder if maybe Mr. Backus can give us some guidance on if there have been other bills where this has been handled, or if it's done this way, if it's 50% of the bills that come before this committee, or if 99% of the bills are August 1st as the day.
Senator Hall, I think that Senator Latz has brought up some very, very good points. This, in terms of the enactment date, I would think could be amended on the floor, you know, if you so chose at that point, and you would simply involve more of the Senate. So just as a suggestion, perhaps you'd like to leave it just the way it is and then address the enactment date at a later date.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I agree. Let's just leave it the way it is, and we can look at it later. Thank you.
Thanks. Very good. Any other discussions then on the amendments? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. What is the penalty level for domestic abuse?
Mr. Backus.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I did not hear your question.
What's the penalty level,
Senator,
for domestic abuse?
Mr. Backus.
Low, basic domestic assault or fifth-degree assault against another person would be a misdemeanor. And the penalties could go up depending on whether the person's a repeat offender or there's a higher level of harm. But a basic assault is a misdemeanor.
And, Mr. Chair, and Council.
Senator Goodwin, if we could, this is an author's amendment. Perhaps we could, move on, and then I'll come back to you on this issue, if that'd be all right.
Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion as to the author's amendment? Senator Harrington.
Yeah, I would just want to note, having run the St. Paul Police Department and having had the largest, and I would argue, no offense to our colleague from Minneapolis, the finest canine unit and the finest training in the state of Minnesota, that this bill is an important piece of legislation. One of the things that I think this recognizes is that police service dogs, like police officers, are atypical. When the gunfire starts, they're the ones that head toward the gunfire rather than staying in their houses. That puts them in a position of risk that almost no other citizen routinely puts themselves into. I've watched our dogs literally take bullets for our handlers, as in the case of Tim Jones. I've watched them defend to the death, literally, our officers, and it kept them from being killed. And so this is, I think, a very important step to bring the police service dog status up in recognition of the sacrifices they make and the sacrifices that the handlers make in having these partners with them.
Thank you, Senator Harrington. At this point, we are going to proceed with the motion to amend Senate File 121, and Senator also so renews his motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying no. The motion is adopted and the bill is amended. Now, Senator Hall, you want your other testifier to
please
begin at this point? I'm going to do my very best. Officer Fettitidi.
Ficadenti.
Well, I was kind of close. please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Officer Mark Ficadenti, head trainer of the St. Paul Police Canine Unit. And I certainly do not want to be remiss in recognizing Senator Harrington, my chief, for 6 years. I served as head trainer under Chief Harrington for 6 years, and I'm a 26-year member of the St. May I lift this? Is this okay to lift this up?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm a 26-year St. Paul police officer and a 21-year active member of the St. Paul Police Canine Unit. I've held the position of head trainer for the past 11 years, six of those under Chief Harrington. And my role here today is to speak or address specifically the restitution issue part of the bill. And if you have a police service dog in your community, in all likelihood, it has been trained by the St. Paul Police Canine Unit. We are a regionally certified training center, and over the years, being one of the oldest canine units in the country, have trained not all, but most police service dogs throughout the region. March 7th of this year will be our spring rite of training, and we will be training 16 new police service dogs for the region. The cost of one of those police service dog candidates is $7,500 US. And people ask why I use the term US dollars. All our dogs are purchased from vendors overseas. And the reason we go overseas, people wonder, is people ask, well, why do you go overseas and purchase German Shepherd dogs when I can go through the newspaper and see them for $250 or $500? The reason we go overseas to purchase police service dog candidates is because they are bred specifically to be police dogs. There's an old expression, just because you have a horse doesn't mean it can run in the Kentucky Derby, and that so applies with German Shepherd dogs as well. Just because you have a German Shepherd dog does not mean it can become a police service dog candidate. With the fluctuation of the euro, that adds a tremendous financial burden to agencies that are wishing to replace a dog, like the City of Roseville, or those that are adding a dog. The St. Paul Police Canine Unit trains police service dogs as a service. It's $2,500 to provide 12 weeks of our basic canine handler school to any agency. We are one of the few schools throughout the United States that offers a comprehensive 12-week basic canine handler school. If you were to purchase that or put a price tag on that anywhere else, it would be $15,000 or perhaps even $20,000. That does not cover the cost of the specialized training, which is explosive detection or narcotics detection, wildlife detection. We've trained a detector mercury dog or a mercury detecting canine team for the Minnesota Department of Energy, and so we're very specialized in our training. That is a sum of $500 as well. The total package with regard to the cost of a police service dog is wages and time. It doesn't make a bit of difference if you're a St. Paul police, if you're with the St. Paul Police Department, the Roseville Police Department, or the Minneapolis Police Department. Time. Officers off the street, and that 12 weeks puts a stress on all agencies, including our own. So it's those factors that we find to be not as critical, of course, but to be a very critical part of this element, and that has a lot to do with the fluctuation of the euro, and just the daily cost of doing business here in St. Paul.
Thank you, Officer. I'm going to swing back at this point to Senator Goodwin, who I cut off, and I apologize.
You had
some questions. Please
You're
go
right.
ahead.
I'm wanting to pursue this area just because I'm concerned, and I certainly support police dogs. And my brother-in-law was one of the first in the state to train them 35 years ago in Anoka County and start the program. I actually helped start the program, and I'm certainly appreciative of that. But I'm concerned about uneven sentencing, and I'm wondering, that's why I'm asking the question, because I don't know what the penalties are for domestic abuse. And I heard that it was a misdemeanor. We're looking at felonies here and gross misdemeanors. And I'm wondering if there's not, like we're asking for in this bill, there's not a staged penalties for domestic abuse based on how serious the injury is, or there is?
There is.
I'm sorry, would you repeat?
I'm asking if there's a staged penalty like we're asking for in this bill on domestic abuse. Are there gross misdemeanors and felonies that are, other than murder, I'm sure that's, you know, if it goes that far, but what are we looking at for domestic abuse cases for the toughest penalty for bodily injury?
Mr. Chair, members, the domestic assault law, there's enhancements if a person is a repeat offender. It could go up to either a gross misdemeanor or a felony, or if the assault was committed with a firearm. If it's a serious assault involving, like, substantial bodily harm, great bodily harm, then I believe it would be charged under the regular assault laws. So we do have heightened penalties depending on, again, if the person is a repeat offender or if the level of harm rises to, say, substantial bodily harm or great bodily harm.
Another
okay,
good one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then what we're seeing here, though, is with the first incident with a police dog, it's a more major crime than a first incident with a domestic assault. Is that correct, or am I getting that wrong?
Mr. Beck.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, Senator Goodwin, I guess I would say a low-level assault against a public safety dog under this bill would be a misdemeanor. If there's demonstrable bodily harm, it would be a gross misdemeanor, and then substantial or above would be the felony. for example, a substantial bodily harm against a regular person would be a third-degree assault, and that would be a 5-year felony. So that would be a more severe penalty than, say, the substantial bodily harm against the animal.
Okay, thank you. That answers my question.
Senator Thompson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One, how much I'm glad the amendment took out the cap on restitution, but how much would market value, say you do training for $2,500, what's the market value of a dog who's been fully trained? Is this $30,000 or just ballpark, whatever it is?
Mr. Chair and Senator
Officer,
Marty.
Fekadenzi.
Yeah, there you go. Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, it depends on the police department. For example, the cost of the police service dog and the training is $8,500 or $9,500 for us. But the more critical element is the wages. It's the wage packages of the officer through that, going through our 12-week basic canine handler school. So the wages of a 26-year police officer obviously would differ from that of a 5-year police officer. Well, see, may I address Senator Goodwin's question as well, please, with regard to that?
Please,
one of the factors,
ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, one of the elements that we're looking in this bill as well is reducing the threshold from great bodily harm to substantial bodily harm. Many agencies throughout, or I should say many states throughout the United States now have reduced that threshold with regard to deadly force. For example, what is deadly force? Force likely to cause death or great bodily harm. They've taken the great bodily harm threshold out of it and reduced it to substantial bodily harm. So what the penalty is really is with regard to the police service dog is not the significant part of the law. What it is, it's reducing that threshold. Back in 2001, the St. Paul Police Canine Unit had a dog stabbed 3 times with a screwdriver. And based on the statute as it reads today, great bodily harm, we were not able to charge this offender under that offense because those stab wounds did not fall within the threshold of great bodily harm. Today, that threshold, if the law changed to substantial bodily harm, that individual could have been charged with that crime.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, one other question for Senate counsel, just because I have a feeling it's related to that, but when you have a service dog, not a law enforcement dog, but a service dog, which I assume are also highly trained, and I think they're probably cheaper than this. But do we have similar laws for that in terms of severity of penalty and restitution? Do we allow restitution there? Otherwise, I'm sure we're going to be fixing that at some point. But
Mr. Backus.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, yes, we do have penalties for service animals, harm caused by humans. For death or great bodily harm, it's currently a higher penalty than the proposed bill. It's a felony with a statutory maximum of 4 years. For substantial bodily harm, it goes down to a 2-year felony. And then in terms of restitution, there's a very similar restitution there as is contained in this amendment, where it's mandatory restitution, there's no cap, and the court can lower it if the offender is indigent. So this restitution provision will be very similar to that one.
Thank you.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to point something out that I suspect these gentlemen are too humble to point out, and that is that when we start comparing general criminal law to the law that applies to these folks, you consider the fact that an attack upon them is an attack upon the society at large and the law enforcement mechanism that protects us. And therefore, in certain instances, it is justified if an act over here is committed against a civilian like me, as opposed to one of these gentlemen in uniform or their dogs, it is legitimate to have a difference in penalty because of the degree to which that represents an attack on our society. So it's not a comparison of apples to apples. Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I absolutely agree with what Senator Thompson says, except this bill pertains to the animals, not the individuals. And The second thing I wanted to ask is, are we going to have a fiscal note on this bill? Because we've heard from the courts and everybody how difficult a time they're having making cases. And I just think maybe by the time we get to finance or something, we should at least take a look at the fiscal costs. And maybe there won't be any, depending on if we have no cases. But just some estimation of what it would cost.
Senator Goodwin, when we get done with the policy discussion, I do intend to inquire of Mr. Turner.
Thank you.
Officer Jorgensen.
If we're going to delay that, Mr. Chair, then I can certainly wait to comment on Senator Goodwin's statement.
Officer Fettuccini. I keep wanting to say Fettuccini.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I like Fettuccini.
Thank you. I would like to make it perfectly clear, too, that we as canine handlers and professional dog handlers, we do not elevate the life of a dog to that of a human being, so we do understand the penalty concerns of that. As a matter of fact, most people refer to police canine teams as police officers. They are not. They are valued, but the reason we use dogs is for officer safety reasons, to enhance officer safety. So, and what Senator Thompson says is true, but we do want to make sure that everybody does clearly understand that we don't elevate the status of a dog to that of a human being.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To any one of the testifiers, could you tell me if you have statistics related to how many times a dog has saved a police officer's life? Do you have those?
Mr. Chair.
Sir Jorgensen.
Madam Senator, I don't have specific data on that, but in regards to this, will tie into the fiscal note a little bit. We do have some statistics based on the number of assaults that may potentially be charged under the proposed language. In the last 2 years, we polled both Region 18 and Region 12, which are the canine regions in Minnesota. There have been three incidents that would have potentially been charged under the proposed language. Keep in mind there's 380 or so dogs in the state that get deployed thousands of times a year, get deployed daily. That's a very small number. More often than not, these dogs are only deployed during more serious crimes, usually felony-level crimes. Not always, but usually. Oftentimes, when the dogs are assaulted, the way the current statute is written, it's kind of an afterthought. The gross misdemeanor assault that's currently in place usually gets washed out by the felony crimes that are usually more prevalent when these dogs are deployed. Specifically, in polling Minneapolis PD and their canine unit, they've had four assaults on canines in the last 10 years that would be chargeable under this proposed language. And in St. Paul Police Department, in the last 6 years, the stabbing incident Officer Ficcadini just told you about would be the one instance where they had a crime or an assault that would have been chargeable under the proposed language. So again, not a crime of great frequency. Obviously, we have to be cognizant of that, and we that was brought to our attention when we were trying to make a move to bring forth a new bill changing the law. But again, these numbers are very small considering what we're asking these dogs to do and how often they're doing it.
Senator Harrington.
Mr. Chair, I would also point out that in our reference to the dogs and the way St. Paul sets up ours, these dogs are truly a force multiplier, so it is very difficult to make a determination of how many lives they save, because every time we send one dog into a building to search for a burglar who may or may not have assaulted an officer there, we're not just saving one officer, we're saving the 10 officers it would have taken to search that same building. Every time we make a traffic stop on a felony auto theft where the bad guy gives up because they announce the canine is going to be released, you're not saving one officer, you're saving all those people who would have continued the chase through the yards potentially. So it's very difficult, I think, to put a finite number on what these dogs bring. It's also very difficult to talk about what the restitution should be. The dogs quite literally save lives, and they save thousands and thousands of officer hours in just pursuing our normal day-to-day business.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. And I have to echo what the former chief is saying here. Just a little background on myself. I was the first canine officer in Douglas County, and since then, I think there's been some canine officers from Douglas County that actually attended the St. Paul Academy, and they do a tremendous job training both the dog and the officer. And the officer component is very, very expensive. I mean, there's no question about that. In fact, to the point where some years ago, I'll give you a little little history and why I really appreciate Senator Hall bringing this forward. Back before MCIT, which is the insurance carrier for most all counties and cities in the state, at one time would not actually pay for a dog. And the reason I ended up going down to the committee at that time as an administrator, no longer a canine handler, my years were already behind me as far as canine, but we actually lost a canine that was run over when the officer was out of the car. For some reason, that dog got away from him, and he was killed in the line of duty. And all of a sudden, that department now is out, oh, I don't even know the numbers at that time, $30,000, $40,000 to have to replace that. And it just struck me very, very interestingly that if a county worker would have been out on the street with a tripod doing some measuring and doing some surveying, if that tripod had been run over by a truck, that would have been paid for by MCIT insurance. So I went down there and testified, and we actually got the insurance thing taken care of. And I think that was a step in the right direction, but I'm so glad you've come along with this bill now. This is really stepping up. And as the chief said, when you talk about the amount of deterrent and what these dogs are worth, you know, there's never a burglar that will call us up and say, gee, I seen that canine over in my area in Garfield last night. Actually, I'm going to go up in Otter Tail County and burglarize up there instead. You know, they just don't come out with that kind of information for us. So the chief is right. You just can't put a price on this, just how much the investment the county or city goes into, and also the officer protection, obviously, one thing. And one thing is not talked about is the public relations. I mean, the public relations with a canine officer and standing in front of a group of kids is just unbelievable, unmatched. Thank you, Senator Hall, and officers, for what you do and for bringing the bill forward. It's a great bill.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? Mr. Turner. I'm sorry. Officer?
Mr. Chair, if I may address Senator Hoffman's question as well, or concern. The nature of the police service dog business, these dogs are tough dogs. This law is an extreme, of course, but dogs are punched, they're kicked, they're stabbed daily. Some bad guys don't want to go to jail. And that's why we use dogs. It's that proximics. We send the dogs in where we don't want to send police officers. So they battle. And we teach the dogs that the harder to fight, okay, they will always win. They're very courageous. So most of the injuries that occur are just like injuries you and I would suffer in an athletic competition. Strains, sprains, perhaps some lacerations. That's common day occurrences for police service dogs. But this bill is for that extreme when you have major under assault. That butterfly knife could have been for Officer Jorgensen. So this isn't for the punch in the nose or the swat against the backside of a police dog. This is for the down and dirty that wants to escape.
Thank you. Mr. Turner, could you address the issue of a fiscal note, if any?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, members, a fiscal note wasn't requested for Senate File 121 because a note on House File 141 had already been requested. And the author's amendment further expands the felony to include substantial bodily harm. So the House note wasn't included in your packet, and instead I've distributed a summary of the impact of the amended bill. According to the Sentencing Guidelines Commission analysis, from 1991 to 2010, there have been no felony convictions for the killing of a police dog. However, from 98 to 2010, there have been four gross misdemeanor convictions for causing substantial or great bodily harm to a police dog. And from this data, the commission projects that under the House bill, there will be two new felony convictions in 12 years, or one every six. And under the Senate bill, there will be four new felony convictions, or one every three. In addition, it should be noted that this is an unranked felony, so the presumed sentence would probably be jail time and probation rather than imprisonment in a state facility. And therefore, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission projected that in its original note, and as well when I talked to them about the Senate revision, that it would have minimal impact on state resources. But it should be noted in this and every other bill that we take up here that the bill has minimal but incremental state court and public defender costs, as well as local jail and local supervision costs. And over time, with more and more legislative action, those costs accumulate.
Thank you. Any further discussion? There being no further Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I just thought I'd say, as representing Roseville, I wanted to thank Officer Jorgensen and Major for their good work. I think that's probably my best-known constituent right now.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chairman, can I also thank the Chief of Police, Mr. Mathwig, from the Roseville Police Department, sitting over next to us here, also willing to answer any questions. And I believe the doctor that took care of Major here. Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Letts.
Perhaps we could identify the doctor who is responsible for saving Major's life for the record as well. I'll embarrass her, but
Officer Jordan.
I think it's worth Mr. noting publicly.
She's a savior in my eyes. It's Dr. Lisa Powell. She's a criticalist at the U of M. They've done amazing work, and she's nursed him back to health on more than one occasion. So thank you for taking the time to actually have us recognize her.
Thank you, Senator Letts.
Thank you. Anything further in way of discussion? And I'm not aware, Senator Hall, of this bill going anywhere in terms of any other committee, so I assume you, nope. Am I correct on that?
I believe you are, yes.
All right, then I would assume then you are renewing your motion that this bill be recommended to pass to the floor. Is that correct?
I am doing that.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The motion passes. The bill as amended is passed to the floor. Any further business for the committee? I think that takes care of our agenda today. If not, we stand adjourned.